Welcome back to the Actual News Podcast. My name is Olga Nastrova, and today I have all the actual news from the United States and the world just in time for the holidays. Let's start. So let's begin with some quick news. A technical issue has led to the cancellation of all American Airlines flights across the United States, causing widespread delays during the busy Christmas season. This follows COO David Seymour's recent interview highlighting the airline's holiday preparations. American Airlines, the largest U.S. carrier, typically transports over 500,000 passengers daily, with numbers surging during the holidays. Former U.S. President Bill Clinton was discharged from a Washington hospital on Tuesday after being treated for the flu, his deputy chief of staff said in a post on X. Syrian authorities have officially declared Catholic Christmas a public holiday, closing government offices on December 25th and 26th. Luigi Mangione, the alleged killer of UnitedHealthcare CEO, has pled not guilty to state murder charges in court in New York. President-elect Donald Trump announced plans to direct the Justice Department to aggressively seek the death penalty for violent rapists, murderers, and monsters. His statement on Truth Social comes after President Joe Biden commuted the sentences of 37 federal death row inmates to life imprisonment. Despite a pledge in October to curb gang attacks on food convoys in Gaza, Israel has taken limited action, worsening the humanitarian crisis. Armed groups have looted 8 shipments worth $9.5 million in October, with conditions deteriorating in November. UN and U.S. officials state that Israel's focus on combat operations against Hamas has left supply routes insecure, leading to severe food shortages as bakeries close and prices soar. Most of Gaza's 2.1 million residents are in dire need, with negotiations to restore security and shipments unresolved. Japanese Prime Minister Shigeru Ishiba expressed his desire to strengthen Japan's alliance with the United States and emphasized the importance of meeting with U.S. President-elect Trump as soon as possible. A Russian court has sentenced U.S. citizen Eugene Spector to 15 years in prison for espionage. Already serving a 3.5-year sentence for bribery, Spector, originally from Russia, was charged with espionage in August 2023. Before his 2021 arrest, he chaired Met Polymerprom Group, a company specializing in cancer-curing drugs. In his initial case, Spector admitted to assisting in bribing an aide to a former Russian deputy prime minister. A U.S. judge on Monday delayed the trial for Ryan Roth, the suspect in second assassination attempt on President-elect Donald Trump, until September 2025. Roth lawyers sought the delay, citing the extensive volume of evidence in the case. President Biden will decide whether Japan's Nippon Steel should be allowed to buy U.S. steel after a committee reached no consensus. He is expected to block the deal. Baristas at Starbucks stores in Los Angeles, Seattle, and Chicago areas are expected to conclude a strike today, according to the union. Honda and Nissan are considering joining forces, though previous auto industry mergers highlight potential challenges. And finally, Elon Musk is working to create a town in Texas. Nearly all its residents are renters and SpaceX employees. Now to other news. President Joe Biden has signed into law H.R. 5009, the Service Member Quality of Life Improvement and National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2025, which authorizes funding for the Department of Defense, Department of Energy, State Department, and other key agencies. The act provides crucial benefits for military personnel and supports national defense, foreign affairs, and homeland security. While the president supports the act's overall objectives, he raised concerns about certain provisions that could interfere with his constitutional authority in foreign policy and national security matters. Biden emphasized the importance of executive discretion in international negotiations and protecting sensitive information, urging Congress to reconsider certain restrictions, including those related to Guantanamo Bay detainees and the treatment of service members' families based on gender identity. President Joe Biden has returned Senate Bill 4199, known as Judicial Understaffing Delays Getting Emergency Solved Act of 2024, without his approval. The bill seeks to create additional judgeships just weeks before the close of 118th Congress. However, Biden argues that the legislation was rushed and fails to address crucial questions regarding the allocation of new judgeships and how the work of senior status and magistrate judges might impact the need for new positions. The president's veto stems from concerns that the bill, which proposes new judgeships in states where existing judicial vacancies have been intentionally left open, reflects political motivations rather than addressing actual judicial efficiency and caseload issues. Biden emphasizes that these questions must be thoroughly studied and answered before creating permanent positions for life-tenured judges. In his statement, he said, quote, "The efficient and effective administration of justice requires that these questions about need and allocation be further studied and answered before we create permanent judgeships for life-tenure judges," unquote. By vetoing the bill, Biden calls for further deliberation on how to best address judicial staffing needs. In other news, a Texas federal judge ruled that the Biden administration likely exceeded its authority with a rule enhancing privacy protection for women seeking abortions and patients receiving gender-affirming care. U.S. District Judge Matthew Kaczmarczyk granted a preliminary injunction blocking enforcement of the rule against Dr. Carmen Pearl, who argued the regulation could impede her ability to report abuse cases. The rule, issued by the Department of Health and Human Services in April, prohibits healthcare providers from sharing information about legal abortions with the state authorities seeking punitive action. It aims to protect reproductive healthcare access after Supreme Court's 2022 reversal of Roe v. Wade. Judge Kaczmarczyk, a Trump appointee, expressed concerns that non-lawyer physicians like Pearl may struggle to navigate the complexities of the rule. HHS has not commented on the ruling, which follows judge's controversial 2023 decision to suspend FDA approval of the abortion pill, Mifepristone, a decision later overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court. The Republican-controlled U.S. House Judiciary Committee has intensified its scrutiny of climate-conscious investment practices, sending letters to 60 U.S. asset managers involved with the Net Zero Asset Managers Initiative. The initiative, representing over $57.5 trillion in assets, commit members to pursuing net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. Committee Chairman Jim Jordan and Representative Thomas Massey allege in the letters that fund managers' collaboration through NZAM may violate U.S. antitrust laws. The letters seek details on how participation in NZAM has influenced corporate voting and stewardship strategies. This action builds on the committee's December 13 report, which claims asset managers colluded to reduce emissions. The report and related allegations have been dismissed by committee Democrats and denied by major firms such as BlackRock, State Street, and J.P. Morgan Asset Management, all of whom declined to comment on the latest inquiries. Republicans also previously claimed credit for these firms, distancing themselves from the Climate Action 100 Plus, another investor climate group. Mindy Lubber, CEO of environmental advocacy group CIRES, an NZAM partner, criticized the committee's action, stating, quote, "This is consistent with efforts to suggest that investors ought not to consider climate risk, when of course they should, as part of their fiduciary duty," unquote. The inquiry underscores an ongoing clash over the role of environmental concerns in corporate governance, with Republicans framing climate initiatives as potential overreach and environmental advocates defending them as essential risk management. Now to New York. Erdin Arkan, a construction executive accused of illegal campaign contributions to New York Mayor Eric Adams' 2021 campaign, intends to plead guilty to conspiracy to commit wire fraud, according to court records. The charges stem from the straw donations, which disguise the true donor's identity. Adams, who's running for re-election, has pled not guilty to multiple charges, including bribery, solicitation of foreign campaign contributions, and wire fraud. His trial is set for April, coinciding with his re-election campaign. Adams' attorney, Alex Spiro, has yet to comment on the latest developments. And the U.S. President-elect Trump has expressed dissatisfaction with Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, questioning whether he can retain his position, according to Politico article. Trump reportedly criticized the recent budget deal that averted a government shutdown and Johnson's failure to secure an increase in the debt ceiling, which was a priority for the president-elect. Sources close to Politico also cited growing tensions between Trump's team and Johnson due to insufficient coordination on legislative strategy. The situation has led to speculation about the speaker's ability to maintain Trump's confidence as key fiscal and policy battles loom in Congress. And as President-elect Trump prepares to take office on January 20th, the cryptocurrency industry is urging his team to prioritize pro-crypto policies through executive orders. These measures aim to mainstream digital assets, establish a strategic Bitcoin reserve, ensure crypto firms have access to banking services, and create a crypto-focused industry council. Trump campaigned as a crypto president and a pledge to reverse President Joe Biden's regulatory crackdowns on the sector. His team has already announced the key appointments, including crypto-friendly figures like Paul Atkins and SEC Chair and David Sachs as White House crypto czar. Industry officials are advocating for Bitcoin stockpile. A draft executive order proposes designating Bitcoin as a strategic reserve asset, directing the Treasury to allocate $21 billion to build a national Bitcoin reserve. Second, banking access. An executive order could push regulators to ease restrictions on banking serving crypto firms. And thirdly, industry council. Trump plans to establish a council to structure crypto-related governance. Trump's promises have fueled market speculation, driving Bitcoin prices to new heights before a subsequent pullback. However, experts note that certain proposed measures, such as easing bank regulations, might face hurdles due to independence of the federal banking regulators. The crypto industry sees Trump's administration as a chance to position the U.S. as a leader in digital asset innovation. While the scope of potential changes remains uncertain, early executive actions could set the tone for a transformative policy agenda. Now, Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum expressed solidarity with Panama after U.S. President-elect Donald Trump suggested reclaiming control over the Panama Canal. Sheinbaum stated, quote, "The Panama Canal belongs to Panamanians," unquote, during her press conference on Monday. Trump's remarks made during a rally in Arizona criticized Panama for excessive raids on canal usage. He later posted on Truth Social implying U.S. ownership, sparking swift backlash. Panamanian President José Raúl Moreno firmly rejected Trump's comments declaring Panama sovereign over the canal. The remarks have drawn international attention, marking a rare instance of a U.S. leader suggesting territorial claims over a sovereign nation. Now, Greenland's prime minister firmly dismissed U.S. President-elect Donald Trump's remarks suggesting the United States should own and control Greenland, declaring the island not for sale and emphasizing its sovereignty. Quote, "Greenland is ours. We are not for sale and we will never be for sale," unquote, Ajit said in a statement underscoring the island's long struggle for autonomy. Trump's comments made Sunday on Truth Social framed Greenland's control as a necessity for U.S. national security and global freedom, citing its strategic importance, including the Pituffik air base that supports the U.S. ballistic missile early warning system. This is not the first time Trump has expressed interest in Greenland. In 2019, during his previous term, he proposed buying the semi-autonomous Danish territory, a suggestion rejected outright by both Denmark and Greenland, with Danish Prime Minister Frederiksen calling the idea absurd. Greenland, which has the right to declare independence from Denmark since 2009, remains financially dependent on Copenhagen. While the U.S. maintains significant strategic interests in the Arctic island, Denmark and Greenland have consistently rejected discussions about transferring ownership. The Danish government has not yet responded to Trump's latest remarks, but Frederiksen, who remains in office, is likely to reiterate Denmark's stance. Trump's Greenland comments followed his controversial assertion on Sunday that the U.S. should reassert control over the Panama Canal, a move that drew immediate backlash from Panamanian President José Raúl Moreno. Donald Trump's presidential transition team is reportedly preparing for the United States to withdraw from the World Health Organization, WHO, on the first day of his second term. Health law expert Lawrence Gostin revealed the plans, which aligned with Trump's criticism of the WHO as being overly influenced by China and ineffective during the COVID-19 pandemic, again, according to Trump. Trump previously initiated the withdrawal process in 2020, though it was reversed by President Joe Biden. The plan signals a major shift in U.S. global health policy, potentially isolating Washington from international pandemic responses. Trump has nominated WHO critics, including vaccine skeptic RFK Jr., for key health positions. Critics argue the move could weaken global disease surveillance, diminish U.S. influence in health policy, and create opportunities for China to fill the leadership gap. WHO Director General expressed hope for ongoing international collaboration and the finalization of a pandemic agreement by May 2025. Ford Motor Co. is contributing $1 million and a fleet of vehicles to President-elect Donald Trump's January inauguration, the company announced. This comes as Trump's proposed policies, including tariffs on imports from Mexico and Canada, and the elimination of an EV tax credit could impact automakers like Ford, which is navigating challenges in the electric vehicle market. Ford CEO Jim Farley expressed optimism about discussing these issues with the Trump administration, emphasizing Ford's critical role in U.S. manufacturing and the economy. Other major corporations such as Amazon and Meta have also donated to the inauguration. Trump's fundraising for his 2017 inauguration reached a record $106.7 million, while President Joe Biden raised $61.8 million in 2021, supported by companies like Pfizer, AT&T, and Boeing. France's new government will be announced after Monday evening, expected to be today, respecting a day of mourning for cyclone hit Mayotte. Prime Minister François Bayrou has faced difficulty forming a government amid political uncertainty, with only weeks before a mid-January vote of no confidence and a February budget approval deadline. Bayrou has struggled to balance demands from both left-wing and conservative parties. Despite efforts to broaden his coalition, consensus remains elusive. A recent poll shows 64% dissatisfaction with his appointment, and the country is grappling with a deeply divided parliament after the June European elections. As to China, despite mounting debt, Chinese leader Xi Jinping remains steadfast in his top-down economic policies aimed at solidifying China's global power. As tensions with the U.S. escalate over tariffs, Xi continues to push for a self-sufficient supply chain, particularly in critical areas like semiconductors, to prepare China for potential conflict with the U.S. Close associates say Xi believes that while the U.S. influence is waning, China's ascent is inevitable, and he's determined to lead the country toward this vision. Australia's Attorney General Mark Dreyfus has approved the extradition of Daniel Duggan, a former U.S. Marine pilot, to the United States. Duggan, who faces charges related to violating U.S. arms control laws by training Chinese military pilots to land on aircraft carriers, was arrested in October 2022 in New South Wales. Duggan, a naturalized Australian citizen, has denied the charges and maintains his innocence, stating that the pilots he trained were not military personnel. His family expressed devastation over the decision and is exploring legal options, including challenging the government's reasoning for extradition. Now, South Korea's main opposition party has threatened to impeach acting President Han Duck-soo if he does not enact a law to launch a special counsel investigation into President Yoon Suk-yeol's failed attempt to impose martial law. So a little break here. Remember, a couple of weeks ago, South Korean leader declared martial law. For that, he was impeached. So now they have an acting leader, and so the public is pushing him to investigate the previous one, and if he doesn't want to, he will be impeached. All right, so let's continue. Han took over from Yoon, who was impeached on December 14th and faces a constitutional court review. The opposition Democratic Party passed a bill to appoint a special counsel to investigate Yoon and his wife, accusing Han of aiding Yoon's martial law bid. They plan to initiate impeachment proceeding if Han fails to sign the bill by Tuesday. The party claims Han's delays show he's not complying with the constitution and is acting as a proxy for Yoon. Meanwhile, a joint investigative team is pressing to question Yoon about the martial law incident, though police attempts to raid his office has been blocked. Syrian rebel leader Ahmed al-Shara, formerly al-Julani, held separate meetings with foreign ministers from Jordan and Turkey. Jordan's foreign minister became the highest-ranking Arab official to meet with Shara, offering support for Syria's reconstruction. Meanwhile, Turkey's foreign minister called for disbandment of the Syrian Kurdish militia, the People's Protection Units, following their meeting. The U.S. has backed Kurdish fighters in their efforts against the Islamic State. Now, thousands of women gathered in Qamishli, northeastern Syria, on Monday to demand the Islamist rulers in Damascus uphold women's rights and to protest Turkish-backed military campaigns in Kurdish-controlled regions. The protesters, many waving the Women's Protection Units, YPJ, flag, emphasized the importance of preserving rights achieved in the Kurdish-led territories. The rally follows significant shifts in Syria's power dynamics. The Islamist group Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, HTS, ousted Bashar al-Assad 2 weeks ago, gaining control of Damascus with Ankara's support. HTS's conservative views starkly contrast the socialist and feminist ideals of the Kurdish groups that have governed northern Syria since the civil war began in 2011. Protesters condemned Turkish offensives on the SDF-controlled Kobani, a city vital to Kurdish autonomy. Kurdish officials warned of further Turkish mobilizations and expressed fears that the new administration in Damascus would marginalize minorities and women under hardline Islamist rule. Women's rights activists and Kurdish leaders vowed to defend the region's achievements, with one official declaring support for YPJ and the continuation of the women's revolution in Syria. The UN envoy for Syria, Geir Pedersen, has urged for a political resolution to rising tensions between Kurdish-led authorities and Turkish-backed groups in northeastern Syria, warning of dramatic consequences. If left unresolved, clashes have intensified since Syrian rebels backed by Turkey seized Manbij from the U.S.-backed Syrian Democratic Forces on December 9th, with fears of further attacks on Kobani. The SDF, led by Kurdish YPG, has proposed withdrawing forces in exchange for truce, but Turkey insists on YPG's complete disbandment, citing its ties to the PKK, labeled as a terrorist group by Turkey, the U.S., and the EU. The situation tests the new Syrian administration led by Ahmed al-Shara following the fall of Bashar al-Assad. Kurdish groups, fearing the loss of autonomy, demand their rights under the new Islamist rule. Pedersen emphasized the need for inclusive transitional arrangements to ensure Syria's unity and stability. In other news, on December 23rd, U.S. Central Command CENTCOM forces conducted a precision airstrike in the Deir az-Zawr province, Syria, killing two ISIS operatives and wounding one. The terrorists were moving a truckload of weapons, which were destroyed during the strike. This strike occurred in an area formerly controlled by Syrian regime and Russians. The airstrike is part of CENTCOM's ongoing commitment, along with partners in the region, to disrupt and degrade efforts by terrorists to plan, organize, and conduct attacks against civilians and military personnel from the U.S., our allies, and our partners throughout the region and beyond. Now, a U.S. Navy ship mistakenly targeted U.S. fighter jet over the Red Sea on Wednesday, according to Central Command. Two pilots ejected from the jet, with one sustaining minor injuries. The incident is under investigation. U.S. forces have been conducting strikes against Yemeni Houthi rebels in response to their targeting of commercial shipping in the region. Kazakhstan has replaced its economy minister following a depreciation of the national currency. Officials attributed the currency's decline to factors such as the rise of U.S. dollar, the drop of the Russian ruble, failing on falling oil prices, and other economic challenges. The new minister, Sarik Jumangarin, previously held several senior economic positions. Now, Saudi Arabia has revamped operations at its diplomatic mission in Kabul, aiming to provide services to the Afghan people, according to the embassy. Saudi diplomats had previously withdrawn from Afghanistan following the Taliban takeover in 2021. The Philippines Defense Minister Gilberto Teodoro defended the deployment of a U.S. Typhoon medium-range missile system and plans to acquire its own, asserting the country's sovereign right to make defense decisions. Despite China's opposition, Teodoro stated that deployment for joint exercises is legitimate, legal, and beyond reproach. Philippine Army Chief Roy Galito confirmed negotiations are underway to acquire a similar missile system. China, which opposes the deployment, urged the Philippines to remove the Typhoon system, warning of geopolitical risks. The U.S. has no immediate plans to withdraw the system, viewing it as potentially useful in regional conflicts. This deployment adds to rising tensions between China and the Philippines over disputed South China Sea territories and the Manila's strengthened defense ties with Washington. Now to Ukraine. Ukraine will stop the transit of Russian gas to the EU on January 1st at 7 a.m. as announced by Prime Minister Denis Shmyhal, signaling a significant shift in regional energy dynamics. The decision comes as Slovakian Prime Minister Robert Fico visited Moscow to meet with Russian President Putin, marking the third visit by an EU leader to Russia since 2022 invasion of Ukraine. The visit focused on energy discussions and the potential for an early end to the war in Ukraine. However, it was met with sharp criticism from Czech officials and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who accused Fico of undermining EU sanctions and assisting Russian interests. Zelensky alleged that Fico's reluctance to transition Slovakia away from Russian gas and his refusal of compensation to ease such a transition directly benefit Putin by providing financial resources to fund the war and weaken Europe's energy independence. The Ukrainian president also criticized Fico for providing Russian gas and oil pipelines, which reportedly generate $1 billion annually for Slovakia, over European security and sovereignty. Notably, Fico and Putin issued no joint statements or public comments after their meeting, intensifying speculation about undisclosed agreements. Zelensky emphasized the moral implications of supporting Russia amid its aggression, stating that such actions are detrimental to Ukraine, which continues to lose lives as a result of the war. Finally, on Gaza, efforts to reach a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas have made some progress, but significant differences remain. Key issues such as which Palestinian prisoners Israel would release in exchange for hostages, as well as the deployment of Israeli troops in Gaza, are still being negotiated. The duration of the ceasefire has also been a sticking point, with Hamas seeking an end to the war and Israel wanting to address Hamas' rule in Gaza first. The humanitarian phase of the ceasefire, which includes hostage releases, is expected to last 42 days, with further negotiations to follow. However, the conflict continues to have a devastating toll, with over 45,200 Palestinians reported dead and much of Gaza in ruins. And that's it from me for today. Please stay tuned for a Christmas special from the White House by yours truly, premiering on Christmas morning tomorrow on our YouTube channel. The link is in the bio. Please don't forget to subscribe and tap the notification bell so you don't miss it. Now that's it for me. Thank you so much for listening. I'm wishing you and your loved ones a magical and delightful holiday. Please don't forget that we're off for Christmas Day and I will see you back on Thursday, December 26th, per usual. Please check out our newsletter, our AM Actual News. I went live on YouTube with video. So please check it out. It's all in the description of this episode. Thank you and happy holidays.